Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Young. Each week, we'll be interviewing someone from the blockchain industry to learn more about this fast-moving cryptocurrency economy. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The CoinGecko podcast is produced each week to help you stay ahead of the curve. Show notes can be found at podcast.coingecko.com. I highly encourage you to join our newsletter where we send out top news in the crypto industry every Monday to Friday. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter and Telegram at CoinGecko. Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast. For today's episode, we have the honor of welcoming Ruben Yap, Project Steward of Zcoin. Ruben Yap is the Project Steward of Zcoin and has played a pivotal role in shaping Zcoin's strategy and vision. He joined the Zcoin team in October 2016 and currently handles the overall strategy and operational aspects of the project, along with being his spokesperson. Ruben has been a vocal advocate of online and financial privacy for over 10 years. Having founded a leading VPN company, BoleVPN.net, in 2007, and being the first merchant in Malaysia to accept cryptocurrencies in late 2012. Prior to joining Zcoin, he was a partner at law firm specializing in institutional frameworks. Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast, Ruben.
Hi, welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's very good to have you on the show. I've got a few questions for you. So for the first question, I'm just curious, like, I want to know a little bit about your personal story. When do you first join and what inspired you to join the Zcoin team?
You know, as I think back in 2007, you know, our Malaysian government was actually like censoring our internet. You know, at first it started with simple things like, okay, banning pornography sites, and then it moved P2P, and then it moved to political political censorship, right? So it's always a creep of that. And in 2007, basically, BoleVPN was founded as a way to encrypt the traffic to kind of combat types of censorship. Now, in 2012, 2013, because after a few years of operation, VPN business was actually considered high risk and it was seen as like something that could facilitate crime. Why would you want to hide your IP address unless you're doing something shady? Of course, this is different now. I mean, now you look at it, everyone says, like, yeah, it's an essential part of protecting your online identity and privacy. But back then, when I was cut off from my credit card, accepting credit cards, PayPal was charging me immense fees. They are still charging immense fees, like 3.4% and then 2 ringgit on top of that. And when your ticket size is like 10 ringgit, that's a lot of money. Now, I was told, say, hey, you know, since you're a privacy service, why aren't you taking a look at stuff like Bitcoin? You know, I don't want to, what's the point of subscribing to a VPN service when you have all my payment details and identity details? And I just decided, okay, why don't I check this out? That was like late 2012. And, you know, I just started accepting Bitcoin around then. And of course, I was unfortunately just converting all of them. And then right after that, you know, I kind of went down the rabbit hole. I kind of went into mining, you know, all sorts of things, you know, made a little mining farm back with the Antminer S1, S2s, even assembled some of them myself. And I also got involved in a couple of projects like Dash, which was, I think, one of the first few privacy coins. It was Darkcoin. And I was also like, you know, dabbling a bit in Arrow, but mainly in Dash. So that was kind of like my first foray into cryptocurrencies and privacy coins in general. But, you know, when 2016 came around, you know, I think there was already a huge boom and Dash, or rather Darkcoin, had kind of shifted away from being a privacy coin and more about, you know, merchant adoption, being digital cash. And that's fine. And then it became really focused around the masternode element. And I was like saying, okay, you know, when I found out about Zcoin, they were using a protocol called Zerocoin, and it seemed really cool because, you know, unlike previous privacy mechanisms, which were just mixing, you know, kind of hiding your transactions in the crowd, this was a new cryptographic protocol that could allow people to destroy their coins and then redeem them in the future for brand new ones with no transaction history. I found that really, really exciting. I was still a lawyer then, so I just kind of like joined just to figure out how, like, you know, a coin project works and, you know, be in the inside of a project. I never knew that I would be where I am today, but that's kind of how I got into Zcoin.
You used to be known as the COO of Zcoin, but now you go with the title of Project Steward. Why the change in title?
Well, first of all, actually, Zcoin is a community manager, right? I was just managing the Telegram chats and things like that. But what happened was I started assuming more and more roles. No one wanted to grant interviews to a community manager. So, it was decided with the PR team then and also with Paramin, our founder, saying, okay, maybe we need to give you a better sounding title. And that was a COO. But at the same time, it was really weird because we didn't really have a company. We didn't really have a corporate structure. And we, worst of all, we didn't have a CEO. There was no CEO, and yet there was a COO. So it seemed rather awkward. And as a privacy coin, decentralization is particularly important. And we were trying to think, okay, what is a better way to express my role in the project, right? Because I'm not like lead maintainer or lead project lead because I don't know how to code. But at the same time, I'm leading the strategy. I'm leading almost all other aspects coding. So Project Steward kind of like fit into where we see ourselves, which is kind of like, helping this privacy project off its legs, jumpstart it, looking after it to the point where it becomes a more decentralized project, more like on the lines of Bitcoin and stuff like that, where it's not dependent on a single team. So I feel like Steward, which is like after the project, was a much better title to reflect my role.
And how big is the Zcoin team now?
Well, we have around like 15 people. I think most of them are full-time. Of course, we have a lot of outside contributors. I think like maybe like 10 or 15 outside contributors as well. So it's a relatively lean team, but we've also achieved a lot. Don't have an office. So we're all distributed all around the world. So I think it's pretty cool that, in this day and age, we can work on private magic internet money from all around the world without a legal structure. Yeah.
Let's dive a bit into Zcoin. So can you explain to us in your simplest, most non-technical manner, what is Zcoin? Mm-hmm. And more importantly, how is it different from the dozens of other privacy coins out there?
Right. So obviously Zcoin is a privacy coin. And what that means is that we put on the blockchain, everything is permanently recorded. The links and who you transact with, the amounts, everything is fully recorded permanently for everybody to see, not just like selected people. And that's an issue with blockchain in general. And Zcoin tackles this type of problems by, as previously mentioned, allowing people to destroy their coins and, basically breaking the links of the transactions, because when you redeem them, they appear as brand new, almost like freshly mined coins. So that means there's no previous transaction history. The source is totally hidden. And we achieve this using something called zero knowledge proofs, and in particular, a zero knowledge proof called one of many proofs. So it is not ZK-SNARKs variant or things like that. How we are different than other privacy coins is, like, for example, like Monero, Grin, they're all about hiding in the crowd, building like decoy transactions around it, or grouping together everyone who wants to transact with together so that you're kind of hiding the link, or rather like hiding it in the crowd of people. While with our approach, it's more about like completely destroying the link. You're not just hiding the link because you're destroying the coins and then making them reappear. It's like teleportation. Now, Zcash also has like a similar type of like sort of structure as well, except that the cryptography that they use is rather controversial. It's quite experimental, and it's also incredibly complex, which sounds fine, but the problem is that it kind of leads to like security through obscurity, because so few people in this world really understand it. So they're really dependent on the ECC and the Zcash Foundation to continue pushing the technology forward. And we think that's a problem if you want to be a decentralized project. We have the utmost respect of what Monero, what Grin or Beam and even Zcash is doing, but we feel that we want to cut the balance between very high anonymity while at the same time keeping the technology and the cryptographic primitives simple and easy to understand without taking any sort of risks. So yeah, that's kind of Zcoin in a nutshell.
And you are employed by the Zcoin Foundation. Is this a company or is it a non-profit foundation? Where is it located? And how does the foundation fund its operation?
Right. That's a good question. We do have an entity in Singapore, which is like the Zcoin Foundation, but it actually, it's almost has nothing in it. It doesn't have a bank account. It doesn't have Really much of anything in it. The only thing that we use it for is basically to sign agreements, like exchange listings, or like to get the software signing certificates. And that's kind of how we use it currently. Now, the actual, like, you know, whether I'm employed or not, currently we receive a development reward, which is a 6% of the block reward goes towards development wallet. And that is distributed, you know, basically among all the people that are currently engaged with the Zcoin project. Now, this is ending in September 2020. So this is quite soon. There are some talks as to how to continue this funding, whether we should go completely decentralized or should we extend it for another 1 or 2 years. Seems to be right now the current idea is to extend it for another 1 or 2 years and maybe have a certain portion of it reserved for like grants and ZCS items, which I guess we can talk a bit later. But now we don't want to be too reliant on the development reward, because although it's good to have like a core team that's fully funded all the time, and in a way it's also good because you know that we have no ulterior motives, because we don't receive all the money up front. We are funded directly from the blockchain. Our interests are aligned with the success of the project. And unlike, you know, let's say like even Bitcoin, you know, it's like all these companies, they're funded by outsiders, and you have to kind of think, okay, what's the incentive there to fund that? Here, it's really clear what the incentive is. So there's alignment of interest. And I think the problem with this kind of like, you know, DeFi reward funding is that it's a real form of centralization that we are seeking to mitigate through alternative funding mechanisms, such as the Zcoin crowdfunding system, which we basically took the idea from Monero CCS, which is their community crowdfunding system. So the idea of the ZCS is, besides, you know, centrally funded things that we decide, the community can also like weigh in on ideas and fund initiatives that they feel that are important for the Zcoin ecosystem. And I do think funding is one big part of a greater discussion about governance in decentralized projects.
Yeah, most definitely.
So at the moment, the foundation gets 6% of all Coinbase rewards into this development reward fund, right?
Yes, that's right.
There is some sort of a change to this developer reward, and maybe can you share a little bit about it?
Sure. So right now, there's nothing that's been decided. So currently, 6% of the block reward kind of translates to about 13,000 Zcoin a month. And of course, you know, during the really like the bottom of the bear, it isn't a lot of money to fund a team of 15 people that includes like cryptographers, you know, high-level programmers. It's not a lot of money to go by. And the quick comparison, we're probably spending like 5 or 6 times less than many, many other projects which even have lower market caps than ourselves. Now we are like, you know, kind of checking like community sentiment. We're having like regular community meetings to discuss this. We have an ongoing forum discussion on it. We're also, you know, discussing it on our community channels and Telegram. And right now it seems that people are comfortable with us, and rather than shaking the boat and kind of like introducing kind of untested on-chain governance systems to perhaps, you know, extend it for another 1 or 2 years, which means that we don't get like too long of a mandate. But at the same time, we have enough time to execute the vision of the project. And currently that seems to be about, for the development reward, that's kind of looking at be anything between 10 to 15% of the block reward. And that's actually, although it sounds like a higher percentage, it's actually less than what we're getting now, because we have a block reward halving in September 2020. So to maintain that same 13,000 Zcoin a month funding would require a 12% block reward. So anything between 10 to 12% would be the same or a similar type of funding, and anything more is a bonus. But yeah, that's kind of how it's trending towards too. And hopefully in the next 2 years, you know, maybe the ZCS picks up a lot and we can completely rely on that, or we introduce some other decentralized governance type of system. And it is very difficult to do this without kind of devolving into what we call a plutocracy, where, you know, basically only the big whales say what happens. And we also have issues because in privacy coins, you don't want to reveal identity. So how do you determine, like, they're all sock puppets? So whether this votes is like one person or these votes are like 100 people. So I think it's a very challenging thing to think about. And hopefully in the next 1 or 2 years, we have a better idea and can see how other projects' governance systems are working out. Yeah.
So what do you think about the DAFF reward? Recently, the Zcash Foundation made a change. Moving forward in November 2020, like, the developer rewards will be distributed to the Electric Coin Company, Zcash Foundation, and a portion of which will be distributed to third-party developers, individual developers who wants to work on the Zcash Foundation. Do you think, I thought it was a pretty interesting idea because there is no one single party that would be where all the funds will be channeled to. So it helps improve decentralization. What are your thoughts about that? And also additionally, what are your thoughts about Bitcoin Cash plan 12.5% mining tax? I think that's kind of on the back burner at this point in time, but I want to hear your thoughts about how these coins are looking to fund operations and development.
Yeah, actually, like, for what Zcash is, I mean, like, you have to remember Zcash is VC funded, and it's not as much as like a community coin such as like Dogecoin or even Monero for that matter. And I do feel that what they have done is trying to, like, although it's centralized, but they have kind of spread out the power among the ECC, the Zcash Foundation, and the community, right? And actually, like, in the early years, or even in the first 4 years, the Electric Coin Company has almost too much power because they had all the engineers, they had all the scientists, and everything's there. So the problem is that if that's the case, you know, how can you remove them? You can't remove them because there's no one else that can possibly work on it. And that's why if you take a look at what the Zcash Foundation is trying to do, is they started hiring their own cryptographers, their own separate, like, client development team. I think it's called Zebra or something like that. So I think that's really a move in the right direction. And to also, like, have a very big proportion towards grants and stuff like that, I think it's a really interesting idea. Of course, decentralization purists would say, well, you know, it's still centralized. And I still think that because of the nature of Zcash technology, which is so complex, it is very hard to achieve, like, full decentralization, right? And actually, if you think about it, I don't even know maybe of a single project where you can say, yeah, it's completely decentralized and Bitcoin has been cited, Ethereum has been cited. But I don't think people know, like, it is not as decentralized as people think it is. So I do think that the Zcash, the way that they come about it is quite realistic. And I do think they are genuinely trying to bridge power. I do think it's a complete solution. And you know, it still strikes off as very heavy centralization towards the ECC and the foundation. But I think for the moment, you know, for the next 2 or 4 years, perhaps that's the best that they can achieve right now. As for the Bitcoin Cash type of thing, you know, I think it was like, if I understand it correctly, it's like pools that are enforcing this like 12.5% block reward that goes towards them. It's not like, yeah, they were kind of often any blocks that do not form that. I do think that the idea of it is not wrong in the saying that, yes, a part of the block reward should be used to fund development. I know that a lot of people don't think that this is a, like, a form of centralization, but I do think that having a part of the block reward is actually preferable. We talked about the alignment of interests. Now, if you take a look at, like, Monero, right? I mean, those who know, like, what's happening within a Monero CCS, yes, they don't have any block reward, no kind of, like, centralized funding mechanism, but it is very, very dependent on early Monero whales, early contributors. They've made a lot of money from the past bull run, and they are continuing, oh yeah, you know, $10,000, $11,000 isn't a lot of money, and it makes sense for me to contribute to protect my investment in this currency. Whether that's actually sustainable in the long term is a separate question altogether. And, you know, like, take a look at, like, Bitcoin, you know, Blockstream, and it's funded by Blockstream. I don't think it's making a lot of money and seems to be, you know, embarking on stuff like Liquid Sidechain. I mean, there's a bit of an idea of, like, well, whose interests are they actually working for? Now, the problem with Bitcoin Cash proposal is not exactly because of the block reward, but it's because it is the miners almost unilaterally deciding that. I mean, I guess Bitcoin Cash could be have seen as like a miner-created coin. I mean, some people say that. And having setting a precedent that mining pools can collude with each other and introduce almost like rules of themselves, makes me think, okay, well, if that's the case, then why don't you just go through like a proof of stake or like fixed validator model, right? And I don't really have like very strong opinions of that. I do think it's an interesting experiment and I think it's worthwhile like looking at it, but I do think it places too much emphasis on the mining pools and it sets a kind of dangerous precedent as to the direction of Bitcoin Cash mining and stuff like that. How is that, let's say EOS, where you know the validators have so much say, and here you are having the mining pools with a huge proportion of say. So especially for ASIC-dominated coin, that seems to be very against the whole community ethos. But yeah, those are my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I echo your sentiment in the sense that I think the Bitcoin Cash community did a big mess up. Mm-hmm. I would say community, the mining pool, I would say, the four guys, they basically go out and say that, look, we're going to implement 12.5% tax. You are either in it or you're out of it because we're going to offer your blocks.
Yep.
That isn't a very nice thing to say there. So I think they had a big communication issue. It wasn't a proposal to
yes.
Amar was like, this is the thing that we will do. You are either with us or you're out. Which I think is not a very nice thing for them to do. So I'm glad that I think things, I think Roger Ver has put out a plan. So let's see if things go. But I mean, you brought up a very good point just now. So say if there's a new proposal, like you brought up a plan that like Zcoin plans to increase the DAV reward, double it to 13% from September 2020 onwards. And then this is, you guys plan to go ahead and extend this for 1 to 2 years. So how do you go around handling governance? How do you put out this proposal? Is there a voting mechanism for the community to vote on certain issues? Yeah, just how you go around doing it.
That's a really good question. I don't think there's a really like, you know, a complete answer in that. And reason being is that when you have like a poll, it really, I mean, as crappy as it sounds, not all votes are equal, right? Because like I can create a sock puppet account or I don't even hold any Zcoin whatsoever or I'm just like a rival person just wanting to, you know, or I'm paid to vote. So that's why all this like, you know, really simplified polls are something that we have been trying to avoid. Because like, you know, yes, no, and then it's like create a lot of forum accounts. I've never seen this account say anything before. And then next thing, he has an equal voice than someone that's been involved in the community since the very beginning, right? So what we've been actually trying to do is over a period of time is to create the culture of collective decision making. So what that means is that, you know, we are always engaging the community and saying like, what do you think of this? And having like many, many avenues for them to express their opinions. And by creating that culture, it becomes then very unacceptable if, let's say, it's very clear that the community wants to do one thing and then the core team says, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to ignore all of that. Because we've already created that culture, it becomes like a, holy crap, you don't give a crap about us and therefore, you know, you're not acting, you're not like a steward anymore. You're basically a dictator. And hopefully, you know, if we have created the culture sufficiently enough, it would actually hold us accountable because then the community can just say, oh, let's do a community takeover of the coin. I don't think that's really like a perfect answer for this. This is something that we're still figuring out. But I really kind of want to avoid like the Dash model. I think maybe perhaps the best governance model would be something like Decred. But even then, anyone that claims to have solved governance is flawed, right?
Yeah, what do you think about on-chain voting? Like, I'm deep on-chain voting for the Thai political party.
Oh, that's different. Because in that case, we had identity, right? So there we could say, yeah, you're a registered voter. We know your identity. We know who you are. And therefore, you're entitled to vote, right? But here, how do you do that, right? How do you do that without revealing privacy? Sorry?
Well, one token, one vote. If you have one token, you get one vote.
Yes, and that's exactly the Dash model, right? But you have to realize where, like, Zcoin had a founder's reward, which is currently 8% of the block reward. Right now, they're holding a lot of Zcoin. I mean, even though our distribution is quite good, what it means that the problem with having any sort of on-chain voting mechanisms where you holders of coin, because of voter apathy, right? Because if I'm going to hold one coin only while the other person's holding like 100,000 coins, it's very little incentive for me to vote, or it makes me very incentivized to be my vote for, to be bought. And what happens in, like, for example, in Dash, you know, it becomes like the core team and a bunch of whales kind of dictating where the project should go. which I would like to kind of avoid. I mean, I don't know if that's possible in the long run, but I do feel that something, okay, we had actually a recent discussion in the forum that was really interesting and kind of illustrated like kind of informal governance in place. So there was a proposal from a few of the biggest whales of Zcoin. I can't reveal exactly who, but they really wanted to say that, look, you know, I'm the biggest holders. We are the biggest holders of Zcoin. I want the Znode collateral amount to be increased from 1,000 Zcoin to possibly 3,000 Zcoin and 5,000 Zcoin. Now, that was a very tricky situation for us to navigate because, well, first of all, you know, they are the biggest holders. You know, they, you know, maybe collectively have about 10% of the supply, which is quite a lot of coins right there. And they can definitely destroy us if they don't like the project, of course, hurting their own investment. So what we did was like, okay, look, you know, we as a core team should not weigh in too much for this. Like, you know, we should let the community decide. And what happened is that we had, I think we opened a forum article. We pushed people to look at it, to weigh in their ideas. And the idea is that we did not want a simple poll. We really wanted people to elaborate. What is the reason that they are against this? So what happened then, it was very clear that the community was very against the idea of increasing the collateral for Znodes. And of course, there were a few people that just seemed to say, oh yeah, I agree, we should increase the collateral. And there was like hardly any explanation there. But it was very clear that the people who bothered to write a lot, who bothered to explain their reasoning as to why it was saying that, yeah, this is not a good idea right now. And because of that, despite like the whales having a lot of the coins, they eventually accepted the community decision to say that, okay, yeah, we should not change the Znode collateral. So I thought that was a really good first try as to see how like decentralized governance kind of like informal decentralized governance works. And hopefully we can refine this process as we go along. But as I said, it is not about a very like, you know, strict system of saying that, yes, this is the way to vote. You know, I think maybe with more contentious decisions, this will maybe be more tricky. But the idea about creating that culture of discussion, and I think this is something that was really, I like this particular term, which was brought up by Commissioner Hester Peirce, or I think by the SEC in the US, is one of the measures of showing how decentralized the project is the concept of information asymmetry. And the idea is that, does the core team have information that the public does not have? And if we can like bridge that gap and say that, you know, the public has all that information, the core team is also all that same similar type of information, then, you know, governance can work better because then, you know, everyone has the same sort of facts to kind of decide on. And that's kind of where we're heading. You know, I would definitely say we don't have a very core plan. I mean, we have a plan, but we don't have like a core, concrete idea of how to achieve on-chain governance because I feel that a lot of it turns out to be a sham. Yeah.
It's interesting because there are multiple ways of voting for issues, like Dash is using tokens, Bitcoin's case using hashing power as the vote.
Yes.
You can also use masternodes, the Z nodes, as the way to vote as well. Forum discussion as a way to vote on things. But don't you think that this is maybe it discriminates slightly against those who do not have a strong command of English? For example, if you are living in China, you don't have a strong command of English, you can't participate actively in community discussions for Zcoin.
Yeah, so definitely this was something that we also actively wanted to try and bridge. And I think you raised a very good point. Because especially, you know, there were a lot of Chinese commentators and I made sure that all of those comments were translated so that people could see the reasoning behind it. And so if you take a look at the forum, there was a translation of the original post into Chinese. And also they were like, you know, when some Chinese participant, you know, posted a lengthy reply, there was also a translation for that. So, you know, yes, I still think that there is a bias towards English speaking, but we try as best as we can to bridge that gap by making sure that everything's translated. We have all the same information across different languages.
All right, cool. I think that wraps up some good discussions on governance. I'm going to ask you next question on Lelantis. Lelantis is a project that you guys have been working on for the past couple of years, I believe. Tell us a little bit about what is Lelantis, how is it useful, and when will it be going live?
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, so Lelantis is actually a replacement to Sigma. And basically, like currently, with our current privacy protocol, you kind of have to burn and redeem in fixed denominations. So if I burn 10, I have to redeem 10. There is no ability for me to do a partial redemption. And the problem with that is that that means you're forcing people to burn in fixed denominations. And if I'm like breaking down an amount like 536 point something something coins, I have to break down in certain fixed denomination, and that introduces a pattern. So if I redeem, like, let's say, like, you know, 500 denominations, 10 denominations, even though like the math is correct, but because I can see the correlation between the patterns of burning and redemption, it is a real privacy risk. It is also kind of inefficient because instead of having like one proof to represent like one burn, I have to have, like, you know, for 532, I have to have so many denominations just to represent that one transaction. Lelantis kind of does away with all of this by saying that we can burn any arbitrary amount and we can redeem any arbitrary amount, even though it's a smaller amount than the amount that you burned. So this is Lelantis version one, which allows you to, let's say I burn 535.6 coins. That means I can just burn it with one proof, with one mint, and then I can redeem 0.23 coins with, you know, basically two proofs, which is one, which is the 0.23, and then the other one is the change. I don't have to like redeem like the whole entire amount. I don't have to make multiple denominated proofs. So now when I'm looking at it on a, you know, analysis, it actually becomes very difficult to say, okay, how do I know that this span originated from which burn? All I know is that this span must have come from a burn that was larger than the amount that I redeemed. So this is version one. So that is a really huge improvement. And it has the kind of same building blocks as Sigma. So no trusted setup, very simple cryptographic primitives, and pretty good performance up to maybe like a anonymity set of 100,000 or so. So it's pretty competitive. Now, we are actually working, we have actually a Lelantis version 2, which actually allows people to not just redeem the tokens that they burned, but to pass the right to redeem the tokens to someone else. So last time, like currently, like Lelantis version 1 or Sigma version 1, I burn coins, I redeem coins. Now, instead of having to redeem them, I can say, okay, Bobby, I'm going to pass you my right to redeem to you. And that becomes like almost like a Zcash Z to Z transaction because I'm not revealing an amount, I'm not revealing the source. And it's almost like drastically increases the privacy because now with any redemption, I cannot just say it is one of these people who burnt. It could be someone who received it in the intermediary, you know, passing of that redemption right to someone else. So that's Lelantis version 2. We have something else that we actually have not even released to the public. We haven't, I think this podcast would probably be the first time we're announcing anything like this. It's something that we just called Aura. And Aura is almost like an improvement of Lelantis even further, which it's almost like allowing proofs of a proof, which I don't want to go too much into until we have a full paper on that. But I guess in a nutshell, Lelantis, you know, removes the need for fixed denomination, allows direct anonymous transfers, does so without trusted setup, does so without very complex circuits. And it is not just that it is our creation, but other coins such as Monero have expressed interest, and Beam has actually already confirmed that they'll be using Lelantis as part of their scheme to actually improve the drawbacks of Mimblewimble privacy, which has shown to be kind of lacking. So, yeah.
When is Lelantis going live on Zcoin?
Lelantis is set to go live definitely before September, but we're hoping for a Q2 release. There are certain things that we are doing right now, the kind of like, we will probably be going live with Lelantis version 1, but we are coding it in such a way that we can add Lelantis version 2 without too much. We're kind of almost like backward compatibility. So, yeah.
You mentioned earlier just now about trusted setup. So walk us through a little bit on what is a trusted setup and why is it important?
Right. So trusted setup, that sounds like a good thing because you trust it. But in decentralization, you don't want to trust because if you have to trust, then you don't need a blockchain, right? I mean, if you're okay with trusting somebody. So a trusted setup in basically is when you first create this sort of cryptographic system, you have to generate certain initial parameters. and like, you know, maybe like a very, 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 very long number or like a set of like almost like random things. And after that, you have to destroy it. If someone manages to retain that information in any form whatsoever, that person has an effective backdoor into the system, which means he can create coins out of thin air. So basically, when you say trusted setup, you kind of have to trust that the initial parameters were destroyed. It's almost like Lord of the Rings, where you have to kind of believe that, yeah, you have all these sub-rings, but there's this one ring to rule them all. So you kind of have to destroy the one ring, right? And trust that it was done correctly. So Zcash, I think, was one of the first like cryptocurrencies to implement a trusted setup within their cryptographic system for privacy. And what it allowed them to do is to have immense performance, an immense type of like very good performance and anonymity characteristics, but at the cost of trusted setup. And if you take a look at the history of Zcash, there was actually a bug in Zcash that was live for 2 years that actually, if someone had exploited it, it could have created coins out of thin air. And what was interesting was that certain aspects of that trusted setup, because when they found out about it, they wanted to hide that there was a problem. So they actually took down certain things so that people cannot even verify that the trusted setup, whether it was carried out correctly or not. If you want to look at the criticisms of that, you can just take a look at Peter Todd's Zcash criticisms of that. So trusted setup is, yeah, basically you have to trust that certain parameters were destroyed from the beginning, or else there's a backdoor into the system. Yeah.
And is this setup, trusted setup set, done by the core developers, or do this trusted setup on my computer to set up some private transactions? Otherwise, it would just be a public transaction.
Well, the trusted setup, I mean, in Zcash sense, was the original ceremony was done by, I think, maybe six people or so. And most of them were somehow affiliated with Zcash. And then I think there were one or two people that were not, like Peter Todd was also one of them. And the idea was that as long as one person did the ceremony correctly, theoretically, the ceremony, they call it an MPC ceremony, multi-party computation ceremony, is secure. That means as long as one person destroyed it, there's no backdoor. But because there were a lot of criticisms on that, because there were other ways to like, yeah, even though you have this ceremony, there were actually other ways to kind of influence the ceremony. For example, if I corrupt one of the binaries that you use, I could have possibly inserted a backdoor so that even if your cryptography is correct, I could still reassemble it. And that was actually a real risk. And that was actually kind of mitigated in the second ceremony called the Settling Powers of Tau ceremony on Zcash, where they also allowed the public to do part of this ceremony themselves. I think it's a huge improvement. It does resolve a lot of the initial concerns of the initial Zcash ceremony. And like, I think even Tron is doing it right now. I think Aztec protocol was also had to do an MPC ceremony. But at the end of the day, is that you have to trust that the ceremony was carried out correctly. There was no backdoors. So there's still an element of trust. There are ways to mitigate it, but it is just better not to have to trust anything in the first place. Yeah.
Cool. Good to hear those things. I learned some stuff today. Masternodes used to be quite popular in crypto space, but out of style lately.
Yeah.
What is true a little bit about the health of the Zcoin Masternodes ecosystem? Like how many are actively running and has it been increasing, decreasing? What's it like the past 1 year or so?
It actually has been increasing even throughout the bear period. I think we have one of the second or third most like nodes of all like full nodes of any decentralized network. I think number one is Horizon or something like that. I think we have about like 5,000 to 6,000 nodes or full nodes on currently. So it's been working well on that regard. Only recently when there was a huge spike in price, I think like Zcoin like almost like doubled in price in the past like 2 months or something like that. And therefore, you know, I think it's only natural to see a slight drop of those numbers as people cash in their rewards. Now, Znotes was actually, you know, we had a vision of Znotes when we first started. And this was because we were using the Zerocoin technology. And then Zerocoin was, you know, quite computationally intensive. And we wanted ways to kind of offload that computation to incentivize node model. when we moved to Sigma and then Lelantis, that requirement kind of dropped down, and we didn't really want to implement, like, you know, the governance stuff that Dash has, or like the instant transactions and the, or the mixing, which we don't need because we have a better privacy system. So the only thing that wasn't implemented that was useful to us was the instant transactions. So we also had some concerns of that because there were certain vulnerabilities with the previous Dash infrastructure. So we did not want to introduce problems with that. So I would have to say that, you know, Znotes for the first couple of years did not really achieve what we set it out to do. And right now it's just like, you know, incentivized node infrastructure. But what we plan to do with it is right now is that we feel that, hey, look, you know, one of the things that Dash did was really revamp their whole master node infrastructure to use something called deterministic master nodes. And they also implemented something called chain locks. And what that kind of allows is that, honestly, I believe that proof of work isn't really good security, especially for a smaller coin, because, you know, 51% attacks have been happening. And there's not anything wrong with the protocol. Everyone knows the risk of 51% attacks. And therefore, we think that, you know, proof of work as a security model is simple, but it is not great. So with chain locks, it kind of leverages on the masternode kind of network to mean that, yes, it is still miners that are proposing the transactions that go in. It is still mining that distributes the new rewards and helps with distribution of the currency. I don't think there's any sort of way to get better distribution than proof of work currently, while we have the masternode acts as a second layer to prevent double spends happening by miners, because, you know, there's real no good reason for miners to do double spends. So I do feel that with chain locks in place, you know, it will give a really good reason for the Znotes to continue earning their 30% of the block reward. And on top of that, we have other plans, because especially now the whole concept of cross-chain, or, you know, the ability to create, like, from big move from Bitcoin to move into like a wrapped Bitcoin version on Zcoin's layer, do your privacy features and then go out. That has become an important topic, and we have some ideas on leveraging the masternode network to do this sort of things. But yeah, that's kind of our view of masternodes in general for the moment.
It's interesting that you brought up wrapped Bitcoin, because the question is actually somewhat related. So I spoke to Beam previously, and they mentioned that they plan to implement privacy for DeFi applications. Any similar plan for Zcoin?
Yes, we actually do have a tokenization layer already that allows people to create their own tokens on Zcoin, which inherits all the privacy features like Sigma and Dandelion and all of that. So that's already, I think, almost like maybe 1 month from launch. But one of the things that we're working on is basically the bridging between other chains. And because we have a masternode network, we feel that that's a good kind of way to leverage the masternode network to provide those bridges with other chains. So although we'll be launching our tokenization layer with full privacy features in maybe like 1 month or so, the bridging may take a bit longer, and hopefully we can get something out this year, but it's something definitely that we want to be a part of.
What are some of Zcoin's plans for 2020 and beyond? So you briefly mentioned some of them already, but maybe you can help summarize some of the top plans for 2020. And I think 2020 will be a very interesting year, as you have your block reward halving coming up in September as well. So yeah, maybe tell us what the plans.
I think the most important thing is to actually get Lelantis out and to actually start rolling out, moving towards the privacy on by default model. The way that we are approaching this is slightly different, in that we will still probably have the ability to opt out into a transparent layer, but it's just on by default in all our official wallets. So that's something, a really big thing. We are very, very far into our deterministic masternodes implementation, which hopefully should get wrapped up in the next 1 or 2 months. We are also very far into privacy on by default Sigma wallet, which a mobile wallet, which means that you can have private transactions on by default. That would be the first for us. And on top of that, I think we really pushing the further research into our privacy protocols. And we're looking at things like MixNet instead of just using Dandelion, which is great for most cases. But against like state-level NSA adversaries, Dandelion isn't so great. But we were looking into integration of mixnets and that. And also, as previously mentioned, you know, integration with DeFi, cross-chain stuff. But yeah, you know, these are some of the things that we have on our roadmap. Oh, and also there's a really important ongoing discussion as to whether we should change our current proof of work algorithm. ProgPow has been considered. Christy has been in touch with us. And you know, I think just the end of this week, on the 22nd, we have a community meeting to actually also further discuss this, whether we should continue with MTP, modify MTP, or move to ProgPow or RandomX or something else like that. So these are all in 2020. Yeah.
Why do you need to move to a new proof of work algorithm?
Well, currently MTP has kind of served its purpose in the sense that it is one of the most profitable GPU coins to mine currently. Our point of view is that GPUs are the best way to distribute your coin because, you know, although the whole idea of one CPU, one vote with like CPU mining, which has been adopted by Monero, in practice, especially we have asked other coins that have implemented RandomX, it actually turns out that CPU mining is a lot more centralized than GPU mining because people have access to large server farms which are idle or botnets which are infected computers that are mining on behalf of the botnet operator. So it is very clear that, you know, despite the whole idea of CPUs being equitable because of the existence of botnets and idle server farms or even like say cloud computing, which you can get for really cheap if you have a source of free credits or cheap credits, then that's why kind of CPU isn't too good. GPU mining. So MTP has kind of resisted ASIC development. I don't think it is because MTP is so amazing, but because it's such a complex algorithm that only we are the only major coin implementing it. And as a result, there is not much of an incentive to produce an ASIC for a top 80 coin with that sort of market cap, right? But as we grow bigger, you know, I do think that MTP is not as ASIC resistant as we think it is. And one of the biggest issues is that the proofs for MTP are 200 kilobytes in size, which means with every mining share, with every mining block, even if it's empty, it actually occupies 200 kilobytes, which seems like a real waste of space and seems to be, you know, leading to centralization of mining pools because only a few mining pools want to kind of host this type of bandwidth intensive type of thing. So we feel that MTP isn't as what we thought it'd be. And we're thinking of like moving into a different algorithm to keep that kind of GPU mining environment. I do think that ProgPow is a better design because it was actually designed with people with hardware experience, not just academics or cryptographers. And that's kind of the general idea of that. But there's a very intense debate going on within our community where some people are saying that ProgPow is compromised, ProgPow is bad, we should just stick with MTP. So it's not set in stone and will be another test of our decentralized governance to see how that goes. Yeah.
All right, lastly, before we close off, how can people find out more info and follow Zcoin?
Sure, I think the best way to find out about Zcoin is through zcoin.io. But if you really want to get to know the team, the community, you know, we have a very active Telegram community, which is also bridged to our Discord community. And you can find all the links on our official website. We're also very active on Twitter, Facebook. So, but I do recommend dropping by, especially on our chat groups. And if you want to weigh in on any of the ongoing debates or the important stuff that is going on with the decision-making in Zcoin, please drop by our forums at forum.zcoin.io.
Cool. Thank you very much for the conversation that we have today.
Thanks so much, Bobby. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
All right, that wraps up the show. Thank you for listening to the CoinGecko podcast with Bobby. If you like our show and want to know more, check out podcast.coingecko.com or please leave us a review on iTunes. If you have any feedback, do drop us an email at hello@coingecko.com. Join us for more next week. See ya.
This podcast is provided as part of the overall information on cryptocurrency contained on our website, is for your general information only, and does not howsoever constitute any endorsement, financial or investment advice, nor any solicitation or offer of securities or other financial instruments. CoinGecko and the podcast presenter makes no warranties, implied or express, of any kind in relation to this podcast, including, without limitation, the accuracy and updatedness of its content. All opinions and recommendations there in the podcast are based on the personal opinion of the presenter. Please conduct your own research and procure professional advice should you, at your own risk, decide to howsoever invest or trade in relation to the content contained in the podcast.